Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFF.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome into the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Pelizzolo back here with Sam Monson, and it's time to preview all of the Week 7 action. Of course, we previewed tonight's game, Thursday Night Football, on yesterday's podcast, so go check that out. Browns and Broncos tonight, and we'll get into all the Week 7 games here today. It's a lighter slate, so we'll have a nice, crisp, 2.5-hour show.
Sort of Browns versus Broncos. Like a Browns B team.
Yeah.
You know? It's like junior varsity Browns.
It's an extended practice.
Versus the Broncos.
And the Broncos are banged up too. Injuries are starting to show up around the NFL, I would say.
Yeah. Seriously.
It's getting intense around the league.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, we're going to go through all of the games right now. You ready to go?
Sure.
Any housekeeping items? Oh, here's my only one at the top. NFL Pod. That's your promo code. 25% off any PFF subscription. That's one. Anything you got?
Yeah, I mean, that's the most important one. If you're on the fence about buying a PFF subscription, NFL Pod is the promo code that will get you 25% off and us some credit. So it's win-win for everybody. Go
We're
get your
here.
Subscription.
We're all working together.
Using that only for PFF NFL podcast listeners. We're helping you help us. That's what we're doing here. So go do that. What else do we got? Email us at nflpodcast@pff.com. Thoughts, topic ideas, musings, feedback, whatever you like. Just email us. We like getting mail back from everybody, and we will answer some of it. We'll incorporate some of it into the show. We were supposed to do that yesterday, but ran out of time and didn't. So next Wednesday, we will answer that guy's email question. One final thing. The charity drive is still flying. We are up to $4,380 from a $2,000 goal. So we're doing pretty well there.
Very good.
And that's not even counting like all the people that promised to donate money based off the severity of the injury I receive during the batting practice. But yesterday, after the podcast, myself and Tyler went to a batting cage. And I swung a bat for the first time in like a decade and for like the 11th time in my life.
How'd it go?
I mean, a bit of a mixed bag, I would say. Like, look,
What'd you learn?
It's not prototypical technique. It isn't. In fact, it's basically a golf swing that's been moved upwards in plane a little bit. So there's some kinks. There's some problems to be worked out. Now, it didn't help that I went in jeans and, it was hot. It was unpleasant. But we went in there and this nice guy was like, okay, we've got 35, 45, 55, and 65 mile an hour machines. What do you want to use? And we were like, well, Steve can throw some heat. We should probably go right in at 65, right? And he kind of looked at me like, all right, what's going on? So we could have told him the whole story, podcast, blah, blah, blah. First time I'm swinging a bat. This is practice. And he was like, well, I wouldn't start at 65. Okay, what would you recommend?
Full disclosure, I could probably throw harder than 65.
Sure, but this was over a shorter distance.
True.
So I don't know how far the thing was, but like 30, 40 feet, something like that. It certainly wasn't 60. So he was like, well, you know, 65 is over a much shorter distance, so it's faster than that. he was like, I tell you what, I'll turn them all on, and then you can just go from one to the other and build up. That sounds good. So we started off at 45. And like, I thought this was going to be coming at me like a howitzer and was sort of swinging way too fast. And then suddenly realized, hey, you know, this actually isn't too bad. And once I slowed down, was actually just timing that one. That was fine. 55 was a significant step up in speed from 45.
Yeah.
That took a while to settle into. And then, you know, once you got into the rhythm, you're good. And then 65 was like seriously fast. Like,
because it was like little league distance.
Yeah. That took some doing.
Yeah.
But by the end of that, you know, I was hitting some of those. The internet would like to calculate some sort of, they have like an equivalency of like things. The internet reckons that a 65 mile an hour pitch over whatever, if we were over 40 feet,
no, just
that's like 90.
No, no. You see that on the Little League World Series all the time, right?
Yeah?
They're playing at 45 feet and a kid's throwing 62, 63, and it's like major league equivalent, 93 miles an hour, 94 miles an hour. It's like, all right, maybe there's some reaction time equivalency there.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same thing. It is not the same thing. So it's not like a little leaguer is going to go into a major league game and hit a 93 mile an hour fastball. It just doesn't happen. Just not how that works. So congrats on hitting a 90 mile an hour fastball apparently yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
But all I'm saying is my 78 to 82 is probably going to look a little faster than that at 60.
So that's where you think you're going to be at? I've been giving you credit for clearly 80 plus.
Yeah, I think I can get over 80 if I gear it up. I really don't know.
Were you at? What was the peak?
90. I mean, I hit 90. I would sit at 90 to 93.
Okay.
And touch 94.
Right.
90, 95 once. 96 once.
Okay. So why are you? She must be able to.
Because
still get
even
85?
In like the off season when I would stop throwing and then start throwing again,
yeah.
if I was on the gun. When the arm wasn't in shape, I was probably like low, mid-80s, and then you gear it back up for the season. You know what I mean? So there is something about just the shape your arm is in.
People keep talking about us needing to like radar gun this. Where do you get a radar gun from?
We should probably talk to like University of Cincinnati or
we need like a lot
somebody
of,
with a baseball program.
Yeah, we apparently need a lot of crap for this. We need a radar gun. We need
it's
a catcher's get up.
We gotta actually set this up.
Well, look, I was at the batting cage. I haven't seen you do anything yet.
I've got a friend to play catch with soon. We're going to be playing catch and get some long toss in. We're going to be getting ready.
Yeah.
So let's set a date. A couple weeks. We'll knock it out before it gets too cold. We'll get the radar gun. Really embarrass myself. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, if I gear it up for a few pitches, maybe we get up 83, 85. I don't know. I don't want to. Getting old.
Well, that makes you feel a lot better about it, to be honest.
Do I drop down sidearm?
I mean, I came away from yesterday encouraged.
That's good. I'm glad you're encouraged.
Now, in one of two ways, right? I think the pipe dream of like actually connecting on one and sending a home run, you know, over your head, over the fence, I think that's probably gone.
Well, maybe if I'm throwing 77 with no movement, maybe.
I mean, it's possible. I did connect on a few. It's difficult to tell in the net, you know, the cage, like where it goes. It flew that way and hit a net, but who the hell knows? But I'm now a lot more confident that I will not swing and miss on 10 pitches. Like, I will connect on something on one of them at least, I would think.
Well, I'm glad you're confident.
Thank you.
I'll give you a little bit of advice here and there. You get your foot down early. You know, get set early. You know, don't try to stride and swing at the same time.
I don't even know what any of that means. I just
remember it. Okay. All right, so we're going to get into all the games. I did tweet out that we do have that very special promo code. It's NFL Pod if you just tuned in on YouTube. Appreciate everybody who joins us live here on YouTube. Don't forget to hit that thumbs up button. It always helps. But NFL Pod, NFL Pod, you get 25% off any product, any subscription over at PFF. So it could be Edge, could be Elite, could be College, could be anything, could be soccer down the road, by the way. Could be soccer. We get 25% off using NFL Pod. All right, let's get into all the games of the weekend. Remember, when we preview, we'll spend a little bit more time on the games of the week. There are some lopsided matchups this week, Sam.
Mm.
Three double-digit spreads, and one at 7.5, one at 7. But game of the week.
Not just double-digit, but 17.5.
Yeah, it's double-digit.
And a half.
Double-digit doesn't do it justice. The Texans, Cardinals, and the Lions, Rams games. We'll get to those at some point, though. Kansas City Chiefs at the Tennessee Titans. This is a good one. Now, the Chiefs are favored by 5.5 on the road. A similar spread. That's where the Buffalo game was, right? It was 5, 5.5, the Buffalo-Tennessee game. So it was very similar. Tennessee obviously covered because they won on Monday Night Football. The Titans coming off that emotional, it's got to be emotional, right? Monday night win where their whole defensive backfield, cornerbacks get depleted and they still manage to win against the Bills. Chiefs are 3-3. Does that shock you? I mean, the Titans are 4-2 and the Chiefs are 3-3. Does that just doesn't feel like that's the case? But it's a pivotal game for both, obviously,
yeah.
as we look into the future in the playoffs.
I mean, it is funny. Those are the records. The Titans kind of put themselves back on track, and yet, like, Kansas City is still clearly favored. Like, they're still way favored and way the better team. But all of a sudden, I think this game is, like, more interesting than it would have been for basically every conceivable week heading back God knows when up until now. Like, this is the most interesting time that this game could possibly be played because Kansas City are wobbling. Now, they've won games. They're still in it. Their offense is incredibly productive still, but they just cannot stop turning the ball over in high leverage situations. And their defense doesn't look good. Now, it had the best game it had of the season against the worst offense, which makes sense. So there is, you know, a world where that defense holds up its end of the bargain just enough for the offense to keep ticking, but it still needs to stop turning it over. And then the other side, you have Tennessee, who suddenly is getting the dudes, getting them all back in the lineup at the same time, which is what the entire thing is built off, right? Like, if you have Derrick Henry and Julio Jones and A.J. Brown and Ryan Tannehill, and they're all healthy, you have something very difficult to stop. If you don't have pieces of that or all of it, except Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill, it doesn't work the same. So you've got this Kansas City defense that hasn't been able to stop anybody except Washington. And now they have to try and stop like three of the most athletically imposing players in the NFL.
Yeah, the Chiefs turnover margin that you mentioned, second worst in the NFL, -8. So the normal analysis with turnovers is to say, okay, it's going to go the other way at some point, especially when you look at an entire season and a team's worst in turnover margin. Usually the next season, it's like, all right, they'll finish middle of the pack or whatever it is. When does this happen for the Chiefs? Because we were saying the same thing probably last week, and it almost bit them in the game against Washington. At some point, though, the luck probably turns the other way. The Chiefs do still have one of the most efficient offenses in the NFL. I think they have a massive advantage against this Titans defense, right? I mean, the Titans defense struggling to get pressure. They've done a decent job scheming it up, and they got to Josh Allen a few times the other night. And I was impressed, again, with how they just kind of held on, right? They just – Chris Jackson's playing corner, and guys are getting hurt. Caleb Farley's now out. The Titans just managed to hold on, but I do think Kansas City is going to move the ball against them. And then it comes down to the other side. And you mentioned on the other day, Kansas City's got some personnel moves that they can make. I wonder, is this the time where they continue to embrace that and get back on track defensively?
Yeah, they really do need to start making the few moves that they can make on defense, try and get incrementally better. Chris Jones has been back at practice. If he plays, I mean, I think they need to immediately move him back inside, not persist with this edge rusher experiment, which just isn't working. Like, it's not that Chris Jones is a bad edge rusher. It's that he just isn't amongst the most elite players in the NFL anymore when he's doing that. So
you lose your advantage of having an elite interior defensive lineman.
Right. There's no way it's a net win to have Chris Jones on the edge, right? If you have Chris Jones inside, you have a top two or three interior pass rushing presence all the way through the game, and it doesn't matter what you have on the edge. If you have him on the edge, you have a passable edge rusher and nobody that's doing anything on the interior. So there's just no way that is a net positive in that way around. Flip him back to inside where you know he's amazing and figure out edge rusher. Like, who cares? At that point, you're already winning because you've got a much better player on the inside. So the Chris Jones thing is a move that needs to happen. They've already benched Daniel Sorensen, essentially. That was a move that needed to happen. I think they need to start messing with the linebackers as well. And playing some of the backups like Willie Gay Jr. more. There are moves that this team can make, but it might not be enough to stop any of the Titans' playmakers.
Yeah, so that's my question here. Chiefs run defense, worst grade in the NFL, 32.6. Man, that's tough to do. 32.6 run defense grade. Of course, if you have Premium Stats 2.0, you can sort by team and you can see all these rankings, all part of your elite package. And then the Titans have the second most efficient using EPA. There's only two teams that have positive EPA. Again, that's expected points added. Two teams have expected points added for in the run game. It's the Browns and the Titans. So my other question too is, okay, do the Chiefs stack the box? It's like, well, every team does that. And you know, I was like, all right, let's look that up. What happens when the Chiefs stack the box? Still second worst EPA per play allowed as far as run defense goes. But this happens all the time in football. It looks like a massive, so the Titans run game versus the Chiefs run defense looks like a massive mismatch on paper.
Right.
And the Titans have, even when they were losing a lot in Seattle, their comeback attempt was led by Derrick Henry. When a team, they're down three scores at one point, I believe, in that game, right? And they still gave Derrick Henry 30 plus carries. So they're going to give him the ball. He's going to have those opportunities. Are the Chiefs going to go all out on Derrick Henry and the breakdown that we talked about yesterday? When you do put eight in the box, Tannehill's also one of the better passers. The Chiefs just have to play much better. Like on paper, this is a massive mismatch. They have to play much better up front.
Yeah, they do. I mean, Derrick Henry is on a roll right now. You keep calling him the exception, which I think is actually a pretty cool nickname for him.
Finally, you actually like one of my names.
I like the exception more than King Henry, put it that way.
That's good.
Yeah, look, he's going to be the driving force behind this Titans offense. He always is. So the Chiefs need to figure out a way of stopping that. And again, another way where Chris Jones inside probably makes more sense than Chris Jones on the edge.
Yeah.
Like, make him as central a focal point of this defense as humanly possible. It's not that you still can't run away from him, but it's harder when he's in the middle than when he's on one side of the field or not. So, yeah, I think they need to figure out a way of slowing down Derrick Henry, and you probably can't do it by just sticking 8-9 guys in the box.
Titans, we keep mentioning this. We've done a lot of Derrick Henry talk this week. We've got the PFF NFL Daily a couple weeks ago asking about him in the MVP race. We talked about him yesterday on our show. But got to give credit to the Titans offensive line. Number 5 run blocking unit. They've played well up front. So they're run blocking well. Chiefs aren't getting off blocks up front. So keep an eye on those matchups. Other side of the ball, as I said earlier, the Chiefs are moving the ball. They're doing it despite Patrick Mahomes not grading all that well this year. And I want to remember when you extended into last year, we've got a longer extended period of Mahomes playing fine, playing well, but not great. His passing grade is just 20th in the NFL. It's actually a little bit higher when I sort it better, but 18th in the NFL right now. Do you look at that as a negative? Like, hey, what's up with Mahomes? He's not throwing the ball as well as he usually does. Or do you look at it and say, the Chiefs are just sitting on this, like, he's going to go on a stretch where he plays 90-plus football, and that bodes well for the Chiefs?
I think it's both. Like, Mahomes will probably swing back towards an elite run of variance at some point. And when that happens, the Chiefs offense, gets even more difficult to stop. On the other hand, they're 3-3. And as long as he continues to play like this, he's still one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL generally, and capable of insane plays every week and all those kinds of things. But they need him playing better than he is right now for them to pick up the wins that they're not picking up right now. And there's only so many games they can drop before it does become a problem. Like, the number one seed is getting further and further in the distance. And, I mean, unless you're working on the basis that all they need to do is to do what Tampa Bay did last year, right? Just get to the playoffs. Doesn't matter how. Even if you're the 7th seed and you're going to be, you have to do it the hard way, just get to the playoffs, and then we know we're capable of going on a run. Sure. I mean, that's entirely possible. On the other hand, it's a lot easier to go on that run if you have the number one seed.
The place where Mahomes has regressed in our numbers and from a grading standpoint, positively graded plays, he's 21st. And then passes at or beyond the sticks, he's only 16th in grade. Those are places where he usually rarely missed throws. It was more, his negatives have actually stayed relatively stable, which is something we talk about a lot. That's the thing that remains consistent.
Turnover-worthy plays have actually gone down this year.
Turnover-worthy plays have gone down, although
despite the turnovers going through the roof.
The grading on those also might be more egregious, like the interception he had the other day. Like, there are some,
his turnover-worthy plays are worse this year than the ones he had.
He also kind of had 2-on-1 play where he dropped the fumble and tried to throw it. Anyway, But the positively graded throws tend to fluctuate based off what the offense is doing and what the receivers are doing and the availability of making those plays, right? Meaning you have open receivers at or beyond the sticks. So this is where I do think the Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, top-heavy offense is catching up a little bit. I thought last week was better with Byron Pringle showing up and Hardman showed up a little bit these last couple weeks. But that's the other thing to keep an eye on, I think, in Kansas City, because teams are playing softer. We've talked about Kansas City playing patient games, and the Titans will probably do the same thing, make you dink and dunk down the field. At what point does Mahomes just start to force it down the field a little bit more and try to create those big plays that haven't been there as much?
I'm sure that's what the Titans want to do, but their thing is, like, can you force a team to be patient when you have the injuries that they have in the secondary?
True.
Like, they are so depleted. I mean, they almost ran out of cornerbacks completely in the last game, like against the Bills. It's easier said than done to kind of take away an explosive attack when you have guys that you completely can't trust one-on-one against Tyreek Hill, or even, you know, there's a degree to which, you know, a lot of the times you can dissuade teams from taking a shot deep simply by alignment, right?
Yeah. Like
if you have, in theory, if you have safeties in specific places or cornerbacks sitting over the top, you're just not taking those shots because generally that's taken away. On the other hand, when you look up and you're Mahomes and Tyreek Hill is your option and the Tennessee Titans cornerbacks are the thing in those areas, you might be inclined to just take the shot anyway, right?
Yeah.
Theoretically, this is not an open throw. On the other hand, look at the players involved. I might just give it a go and see what happens.
Yeah, so we'll see. I'm curious to see how patient and or, you know, how aggressive Mahomes in this offense is.
And that's a recipe for, like, that could go either way. Like,
sure.
That could either create a couple of big plays that shouldn't be there based off the way the defense is playing, or it could be a way that Mahomes, you know, turns the ball over again.
Yeah, and you've got guys like, you know, Kevin Byard's playing really good football on the back end for the Titans. You know, if he can get his hands on a pass or two, those are the potential game changers. Those are the things that have made, that have come back to bite on the Chiefs those last couple, I mean, all season, really. So where do you want to go? Where are you going to go in this one? 5.5, the Chiefs are favorite. Again, on the road in Tennessee, another huge home game for the Titans.
Yeah. I'm going to lean on certainly Tennessee to cover this, but probably Kansas City to win, even though they're on the road.
Yeah, I'll take Kansas City to win. I just think where we thought these teams were going to be is going to start to come back to normal over these next couple weeks. I'll go with you. I'm going to agree with you too. Titans cover, another good close game.
The people will be so happy to hear that.
I'll be watching the run game in this one. People are asking us, well, you guys are talking about the run game more. Well, there are times when it matters.
Derrick Henry, game matters.
The exception.
Derrick Henry officially, according to the data scientists, matter.
All right, go listen to our daily because we talked 10 minutes more about Derrick Henry and him mattering. NFL fans, I'm sure you're hungry for a big win this week. And DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL, has you covered because new customers can bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, any team. And if they do, you win $200 in free bets. Winner, winner, chicken dinner. It's that simple. I want that chicken dinner. If Sportsbook isn't available yet in your state, DraftKings won't leave you empty-handed. Everyone can play for huge cash prizes all season long with DraftKings daily fantasy sports contests. DraftKings is giving all new customers a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes with their first deposit. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code PFF. Bet just $5 on any NFL team to win their game, and you win $200 in free bets. If they win, you win. With promo code PFF this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit, $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. All right, other game of the week here. One of the other top three for us. Cincinnati Bengals at the Baltimore Ravens. This is the tricky part about the games of the week. 5.5 points on the Kansas City-Tennessee game. 6.5 here. Baltimore is favored at home against the Bengals. They're separated by just one game in the actual standings. Vegas still believes the Ravens are a much better team, home field advantage, and the whole deal. What are you looking for in this game?
Battle between first and second place in the AFC North.
I know, right?
Yeah.
No Browns, no Steelers.
Who'd have thunk that before the season?
The Bengals.
This is actually really interesting because this Bengals offense is kind of flying right now with Burrow, all the receivers he has. The offensive line has been better. And specifically, I think the way they match up with this Baltimore defense is really fascinating. Burrow right now is the number one graded quarterback in the NFL against the blitz. And by a distance, like, he has a really good grade. He's quite a way ahead of anybody else. Baltimore Ravens obviously blitz, you know, more than almost any other team in the NFL. That's what they like to do. They run zero blitz a ton. They will aggressively come after you. And, you know, in the past, Patrick Mahomes has destroyed that. So the last time they played, they dialed it way back and they didn't come after him that way. But against pretty much everybody else, that's the MO. That's how they're going to attack you. So yeah, I would imagine that against Joe Burrow, they're going to make him prove that rather than just say, well, he's the number one quarterback against the blitz. Let's treat him the way we treat Patrick Mahomes. You're like, no, we're an aggressive blitz-heavy defense. We're coming after you, and we're going to make you prove that that still holds up against us, not against just regular blitzing teams. So you have the potential for this Baltimore defense to get burned quite a bit if Burrow can keep that going against a team that makes its living doing it that way. And when you consider the receivers that he has to throw to now, like Ja'Marr Chase, obviously insane, particularly on the deep ball, and they've been willing to put that in the air early, plus the knock-on effect that has to everybody else, Tyler Boyd, T. Higgins, tight ends, running backs, like, they have weapons to play with. So I think that's a dynamic that could be really fascinating.
It's a good stat there. You know, Burrow, generally pretty quick release, gets rid of the ball. I think my question, the question I was posing here on this is, when do teams really start to account for Ja'Marr Chase? Like, is he, every way you slice and dice the numbers, he's the most effective deep threat this year. He is not just probably the leading offensive rookie of the year candidate. I mean, he is one of the better receivers in the NFL this year as far as creating big plays, right? At what point do defenses have to completely account for Ja'Marr Chase? And then what's the trickle-down effect of all the other receivers and options in the Bengals passing attack? I think they've built a good passing attack, but Chase is even better. Forget the drop discussion we had in the preseason. Coming into the year, we expected Chase to be good. We liked Chase, had him as receiver one on the draft board and the whole thing, and thought, you know, great move by the Bengals. Didn't know he was going to be this good or create this many big plays this early. At what point are teams really accounting for Ja'Marr Chase and everything he does?
I mean, I would think it should be happening already. Like, there would be no reason not to treat him as that kind of player right now, given the production that we've seen from him and given how readily Joe Burrow throws the ball in his direction. Like, that's their connection. So the question, like, that becomes the fascinating chess battle when it comes to the blitz. Like, if you send the house to Joe Burrow, is his default position automatically, let's throw it towards Ja'Marr Chase because that's where I'm comfortable? And if you're Baltimore, one of the reasons they are really good against as a blitzing defense is because they're very good at knowing where you want to go with the ball when they blitz you. Like, when we send this pressure at you, this is where you want to go with the ball, so we're going to drop a guy into this space, and that's how you create those turnovers, the likes of which we saw, you know, week one last year, where Baker Mayfield throws the ball straight to a dropping, was it Calais Campbell, who got himself into the throwing lane? Like, that's the kind of thing they do because they understand where you want to go with the ball. So the onus is then on you to figure out, well, what's the next step? Like, how do I go to the second place with the ball rather than throw the ball exactly where they want me to throw it? So it just becomes this fascinating tit-for-tat battle. Can Baltimore essentially force them to go somewhere other than Ja'Marr Chase when they send the blitz? And will Cincinnati react to that?
Yeah, Calais Campbell, who you mentioned, he's the highest graded defender for the Ravens, whose defense has not been as good this season. Really nice performance last week against the Chargers. But that's just how I look. Look, we say this all the time. It's tough to just have a good, consistent defense every single week. But are you capable? And I think the Ravens are showing capable. Marlon Humphrey's still out there. I do want to see if they deploy Humphrey in their man coverage schemes on Chase and move around with him.
93.3 grade for Burrow against the blitz. Five big-time throws, no turnover-worthy plays. It's by far the best. The next guy, Kyler Murray, Tom Brady, like, this is some pretty good company he's keeping right now in terms of play against the blitz.
The weekly watch on the Bengals offensive line, and it's not just the offensive line, you know, just winning one-on-ones, right? It's not just how they handle one-on-one rushers. Burrow got hurt on the blitz last year. Not that that's the only thing we're worried about, but good offensive lines can handle overload pressure and all the stuff that, that teams throw at them. The Bengals have not been great at any of that over the last couple of years, even though, you know, I think the pass blocking grade hasn't been egregious this year. It's been better. Right now they're 20th in just pure pass blocking grade as a team. But a lot of times it's handling the overload, knowing where people are going and everything. That battle, Ravens versus Bengals, is going to be a good one.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're seeing the effect of what you can do by upgrading receivers rather than offensive linemen. Because the only upgrade they've really made, they made in the draft, was bringing in Jackson Carman as opposed to Penei Sewell in the first round, and Carman has been bad so far.
Right.
So, like, that part hasn't helped.
Yeah, but having a nice average tackle like a Riley Reiff instead of Bobby Hart sometimes helps, right?
Yeah, just definitely.
Just getting a little bit better in a few different spots. So the Bengals, would it surprise you to hear that they have the number six, just pure defense grade, just by player grades, number six grade, for all the offseason that we spent talking about the Bengals and talking about their offense and all of the various things that they need to do to support Joe Burrow, and the defense kind of flew under the radar with a few moves in the secondary and adding Trey Hendrickson, and they've done a nice job defensively. Going up against Lamar, the MVP hype, we've seen Lamar's not coming off a good game. I think people overlooked that a little bit because the Ravens crushed the Chargers. Lamar wasn't great last Sunday, but Ravens are proving every single week tough to defend, especially more in the passing attack this year than in the run game.
Yeah, and Chidobe Awuzie has been playing really well. Like that's
one of the better free agent signings there.
Right, a free agent signing they grabbed who's actually playing exceptionally well given, I mean, he essentially comes in, replaces William Jackson in free agency. That's the move that they made. And, I mean, he's working out a lot better this year than William Jackson has played for a while. And then William Jackson is playing this year in Washington. So that's been a significant upgrade, even though, like, if you looked at that on paper, you would say that's probably a downgrade for them this season. It hasn't worked out that way.
We talked about Ronnie Stanley yesterday. He's out for the season, so the Ravens will continue with Ali Villanueva at left tackle. Offensive line, been okay in Baltimore. Where are you leaning? What are you thinking on this game? Lamar, again, it's different this year with Baltimore. Further, more of a downfield passing attack, not as efficient from a run game perspective, and I think they are, but they're not. I think fumbles have really crushed them on there. Lamar's got a couple fumbles, you know, in deep in opposing territory that have hurt their efficiency numbers. They can still move the ball. They can on the ground. But it's their explosive passing attack that's made Baltimore all the more dangerous this year.
Yeah. I think Baltimore should still be able to comfortably move the ball on Cincinnati. The real fascinating part of this is going to be that the other side, Burrow versus that blitz-heavy defense and how that's going to pan out. And that's one of those things that I think it's going to go to one extreme or the other. Either Burrow continues and just carves up the blitz, or the blitz like brings him back down to earth pretty conclusively.
For all these former number one picks, I always have this vision of like, okay, there's a if Joe Burrow is going to be the guy in Cincinnati, there's a moment where he goes into Pittsburgh and beats the Steelers, you know, we've seen, or, you know, beats the Ravens, right? The Bengals are this team that over the last couple of years, they've been the afterthought in this division.
Yeah.
Even compared to the Browns. Is this the week? Every time Burrow has a division game, I'll be asking, like, is this the week where Burrow, not like Cincinnati fans are excited, encouraged, he's the guy, but at what point does he take that next step now and go head-to-head with Lamar, beat the Ravens, a team that's beat them pretty easily these last few times?
I think
this the week?
If you were playing, like, the right bet to make in this game is Cincinnati to cover but Baltimore to win. But I think you could definitely construct a reasonable case that Burrow and the Bengals can spring an upset and win outright.
I think I might. I don't really want to. I think I might. So the Ravens have gone from a team that, you, as you said, like, they're 0-1, so close to being 0-2, salvaged their season in an overtime win against the Colts, in a 66-yard game winner against the Lions. Pretty handy win handily last week against the Chargers. I don't know. The Ravens have been kind of walking that tightrope. And the Bengals are really close to being 5-1 if they didn't screw it up against the Packers.
Yeah.
I'm gonna call Bengals upset. I'm gonna keep jumping on this Joe Burrow statement game bandwagon that might not always make sense, but I think Burrow does it. Let's say Burrow does it. Bengals do it this week.
Nice.
I want to see this Jamar Chase match up with Humphrey too. So that should be a good game. But 6.5, Bengals cover and win. You got the Ravens to cover Bengals. Bengals cover, Ravens win, right?
Yeah, since you took the dangerous route, I'll take the safe one.
What did I say? Tennessee covers, Baltimore. No, Cincinnati covers and wins. All right, great.
Why are you writing this down as if we drank this?
I just do.
Oh yeah,
it makes me.
How are you? What's your record on the year? How you doing?
I'm undefeated.
Oh,
there's no record of my record. So,
well, you've got one.
I'm not really keeping track of it. Just typing it in. Philadelphia Eagles at the Las Vegas Raiders. This was the third game we said, hey, this could be a sneaky good one. You know, cross interconference battle. AFC versus NFC. Gosh. Start talking about football, Sam. I'm having a rough,
yeah,
rough moment here. Raiders by 3. Vegas has Vegas favored by 3.
Vegas has Vegas by the home field advantage.
Really quick, though. Now, my perception of the Eagles is rebuilding team. Mm-hmm. My perception of the Raiders is up-and-coming team, right? Okay. That's in the playoff hunt. And the spread's 3. So Vegas is saying that Vegas.
God, too many Vegas.
Is about the same as the Eagles from a team standpoint.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's not crazy. I mean, the Eagles have had one of the hardest schedules in the NFL so far. What did I say? They were second, according to our power rankings. They have the 32nd hardest schedule in the remainder of the year, which, you know, the other way of saying that is the easiest.
Yeah,
so Philadelphia's life is likely to look a lot better down the rest of the season. Now it might not start this week. The most interesting thing about this game to me is that Lane Johnson is back after taking some time off to deal with his mental health. This will be the first good right
finally
tackle that Max Crosby has faced. Like, that guy is leading the NFL in total pressures by a reasonable margin at this point. He's halfway almost to an all-pro season so far. He hasn't faced a good right tackle yet. And most of the right tackles he's faced have not just been not good, they've been garbage. So Lane Johnson is the first good right tackle that he's faced. And even if Lane Johnson wasn't playing, it would be Jordan Mailata who would be the first good right tackle he's faced. So I think we get our first look at, like, what does this Max Crosby improvement actually look like against a viable player? Because we haven't seen that so far. He's just been beating up on a sequence of guys that aren't good.
Yeah, Crosby, he's the most valuable edge. So you mentioned, you know, the grade and the pressures and all that stuff. Most valuable edge by a pretty wide margin here early in the season.
That's just 43 total pressures so far in 6 weeks.
And I always say there is value in beating up on those right tackles. The question is, though, if you do run into a Lane Johnson, can you expect the same performance from a Max Crosby? I think we're going to learn a lot about Crosby in this particular matchup. Again, the Raiders continue to overachieve. I mean, just play well.
That's a pace, by the way, for 122 over a season.
That's a huge number.
Now, 17 games, but still, that would be the most we've ever seen in a season.
Can we just not do 17 game?
You want me to do a 16-game projection?
I told you this was going to happen, and it's already driving me nuts. Everybody, like, Derrick Henry's on pace for like 2,800 yards or whatever.
Max Crosby is on pace for 115 total pressures over a 16-game season won't have.
Yeah, let's just assume every team gets a bye and is going to sit all their starters in Week 17, so it's a 16-game schedule.
That wouldn't be a record, right? Didn't Watt have like 116 one year?
Watt was up there.
Watt and Donald.
Did Houston have a 100 pressure season?
No, but Tamba Hali did, I think. Yeah. Or no, maybe it was a 91.
You're going to spend time firing up Ultimate?
I'm just going to find out how many Watt had in his peak year.
Just regular season you're looking at?
Yeah, because that's
anyway,
the...
Anyway, I'm team 16 game. Like, if you're going to do on-pace stats, 16 games. Use a 16-game on-pace and then say, oh, by the way, there's an extra game so you can add more to that. That's how
I would do it. You're well-actualing the official stats here?
Yeah.
Okay.
I am going to well-actually the official number of games. I'm still working off a six. I'm not even going to work Week 18. How's that? I'm not even showing up in revolt.
J.J. Watt has the record for total pressures over a season. 119.
19, okay.
So in a 16-game season, Crosby, even at this pace, won't beat him. But in a 17-game season, he will.
Oh, great.
So
celebrate all these records.
If he does this and sets the record like 123, you can just be sitting there in your own little world going, well, I don't count it.
Asterisk.
In my world, J.J. Watt is still the record holder of total pressures.
Asterisk next to all of them. Every record's going to fall.
Yeah.
Every record's going to fall.
Which is already happened multiple times.
And people
in
are like,
NFL
oh,
history.
That's impressive. He broke a record. He had an extra game. Of course he broke the record.
Why are you acting like this is the first time this has happened in the league?
Because it was unnecessary.
But it's happened multiple times already.
Because it happened in 1978 before my birth.
Before you cared.
It's fine.
That's the difference.
Because we had a long established stretch of 16 game expectations
that
have now been changed. Oh, he's a 2,000 yard rusher. Great. He had an extra game. It was like when the college added bowl games, and then teams started playing like three more games per season, and it's like every player is now the record holder. Now it's like, oh, you're better than Barry Sanders. You had more. No, you're not better than people back then. You played five more games per season. What else are you looking for in this game?
I mean, that's
Raiders.
What I'm shooting for. What are you looking for?
A couple numbers that I don't know if it surprised me. Would it surprise you that the Raiders have the lowest EPA per play on running plays this year?
No, because they have a terrible offensive line, injured running backs. That makes perfect sense.
Okay. They have the worst run blocking grade in the NFL, the lowest EPA per play on runs. And yes, you've had a banged up Josh Jacobs, although, you know, he still looks all right when he's out there. The other thing, if we turn back the clock to 2 years ago, and I wrote an article, and I've cited this before, but I wrote an article about when you have the middle-class quarterback, when you have the mid-tier quarterback, be aggressive. And when you can be aggressive, you can stumble into career years. And Derek Carr did that a little bit last year. He went from crazy conservative, and him and Stafford were so similar a couple years ago with guys that can make all these throws and do all this stuff, and they were dinking and dunking and throwing the ball underneath. Last year, Carr started throwing the ball down the field more. This year, taking it to even the next level, he's leading the league in big-time throws, four more than Tom Brady, who's second, just in big-time throws. Almost 10% of his passes are big-time throws, and his average depth of target is over 10. And a couple years ago, he was in the sixes. So, these are those hidden, I don't even know if they're hidden, they're just advantages and schematic decisions that you can make to say, look, we're going to be more aggressive, we're going to throw the ball down the field. It might be more volatile, but the payoff is astronomical. And the Raiders are hitting on that payoff right now with their downfield passing attack. And they've been really effective offensively pretty much in every game except the Bears game. So Carr's playing great. And I think, you know, the Raiders starting to use Henry Ruggs down the field a little bit more, as we hoped. And they're dangerous, man. They are a dangerous passing attack. And my point on the run game is they're doing all of this without the run game. They're doing all of this without play action, without an effective run game. It's a little volatile and top-heavy with the big plays, but it's really impressive so far by Carr and the Raiders.
Yeah, the concern for the Raiders a little bit is that offensive line is bad, and if you run up against a team good enough to attack that, you've got some issues, and that kind of shuts them down a little bit. But, yeah, Derek Carr is taking a deep shot on 17.7% of his pass attempts. Last year, that number was 11-point-something%. The year before that, it was 9. The year before that, it was 9.
Yeah, 18 and 19 is when he got into that super conservative stretch.
So 17.7 is essentially the most aggressive quarterback in the NFL in terms of deep shots this year. Justin Fields is the only guy ahead, and Justin Fields isn't yet playing in a sort of he's not playing in a conventional enough way that it makes sense to, like, you know, rank him versus everybody else. Like, it's all or nothing with Justin Fields. Yeah. So Derek Carr is a full percentage point ahead of the next kind of conventional full-time starting quarterback. I will give you any amount of money in the world if you can tell me who the next guy is.
Highest percentage of deep passing attempts?
Yep.
Burrow?
Nope.
Hurts?
Nope.
Daniel Jones?
Teddy Bridgewater.
Ah. Teddy.
Right? How ridiculous is that?
Speaking of embracing.
So Derek Carr has gone from being one of the most conservative quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of just uncorking the deep ball to the point, like, that was his criticism. That was what we were saying was the thing missing. You can't be the level of quarterback you are and not have that deep ball in your arsenal. You're not good enough to get away with doing that. Now he's gone all the way to the other end of the scale, and he is the most aggressive quarterback in the NFL in terms of deep shots. And he's got the players to take advantage of it. Henry Ruggs is making a few of those catches every game. Brian Edwards, once you get to the fourth quarter, is making a few of those catches. Like, they have players to take advantage of that. And that
made me laugh.
They're running like the Pittsburgh offense that you wanted them to run, right?
Yeah.
It's like you're not you've got some problems, so embrace the fact that you can create big plays and just keep slinging it deep. And not all of them will work out, but when they do, it makes up for an awful lot of inefficiency.
Eagles defensively do everything they can to avoid that, right? They're the soft zone team. We saw, I know Brady was dealing with a thumb or whatever last week, but the Bucs were really conservative against the Eagles, just taking the underneath stuff. The Eagles have only given up 5 completions on 20-plus yard throws so far this season. That's third fewest in the NFL. So I think it's a little strength against strength. The Eagles have done a really good job of avoiding those plays. Raiders are attacking down the field. I like the Raiders, though. The more I talk through it and the way their defense has been playing, Casey Hayward, Nate Hobbs, their safeties are playing well. You're even getting pretty decent play out of Jonathan Abram. So, yeah, I just like the way the Raiders are trending here. Favored by 3. And again, I feel like it should be a little bit more. I think the Raiders are a better team than the Eagles. So I'm taking the Raiders to win and cover.
I think they're a better team, but I do like the way that Philadelphia matches up with the Raiders. I think they have a defensive front that can cause that offensive line problems.
True.
And I also think that they, for the first time, have an offensive line that will slow down the most productive pass rush that the Raiders have had. So I'm actually leaning Philadelphia to pull an upset.
So the Eagles have one of the better pass rushes. Where are the Raiders? Raiders are up to 11th worst. In pass blocking.
Brian Edwards, by the way, is the second highest graded receiver in the NFL in the fourth quarter at overtime. Devontae Adams is number one and Brian Edwards is number two.
Yeah, so if you've paid attention, right, Brian Edwards didn't have a catch week one, right? And then he caught like 3 in fourth quarter and overtime against the Ravens, and it's just been consistent all year. Brian Edwards can't catch a cold in the first couple quarters, but once it's crunch time, it's Brian Edwards turns into the T.O. that John Gruden said he was.
Yeah, of course, you know, that has less weight now than it used to. I mean, not that it had much weight to begin with, but...
You don't think John Gruden's Terrell Owens comp means anything?
I don't, no.
Is it Terrell? Terrell Owens.
What?
Isn't it Terrell? Terrell Owens? Or Terrell?
I mean...
Who do you like in this game?
It's T.O.
Yeah, it's T.O.
I took the Eagles to spring an upset. That's what Brian Edwards did, except he shows up in the fourth quarter as well now. You can't turn that into a fun little nickname.
All right, rapid fire through the rest of the games here. Rapid, like, you know, 6 to 10 minutes per game.
Oh, yeah. Real rapid.
WFT at Green Bay, the football team taking on the Packers. Packers are favored by 7.5. Football team hung tough for 3 quarters with the Chiefs last week, and then they were just too much.
Just to put a bow on that, Brian Edwards is 126 in the first 3 quarters, and then second.
Tweet it out.
Fourth quarter and overtime.
Mr. Q4, we'll call him.
That's so much worse than just auto. Auto works, you know, overtime TO.
Overtime TO, yeah.
You can just shorten that to auto.
Q4 auto.
Got to fold in the fourth quarter
now. Q4 OT.
It's got to be like auto with an asterisk, and then down at the bottom in like size 1 font,
starting in fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Dude's unstoppable in the fourth quarter. You just unleash Brian Edwards. Any thoughts on the football team at Green Bay? Football team getting 7.5?
Not many. Washington have been one of the most disappointing teams in the NFL this year. And it's funny, there's been discussion about like who the most disappointing is, and people saying the Browns have been disappointing.
Dolphins.
The Chiefs, obviously the Dolphins. Like, there have been a lot of disappointing teams, but Washington's right up there. I mean, more so for me, because, you know, they were my Super Bowl pick, tongue-in-cheek slightly.
Yeah.
But it's been bad. I don't think you can even blame much the swap of quarterback. You know, obviously they lost their starting quarterback, and Taylor Heinicke has been the guy. Heinicke's definitely played worse than I think Fitzpatrick would have been playing in the same situation, even if they are stylistically quite similar players. The defense has been a catastrophe. They've been worse, I think, than their level of play, if that makes any sense.
Like, it does.
There's a bunch of different numbers that suggest that even by the standards of being bad, they have been, like, not necessarily unfortunate, but statistically improbably bad. And at some point, maybe that comes back, or it might be a signal that actually not only is the personnel bad and the defense overall bad, but the scheme is bad and everything's being made look worse. So they've just been really disappointing. And now you're going up against a Green Bay team who seems like they're kind of getting things back on track. Rodgers is starting to play a little bit more like he did last year. And if that happens, like, that Washington is getting carved up anyway. Like, it just, it doesn't feel like there's much of a way of getting anything out of this game.
My expectation. I think Green Bay, so Rodgers has a 77 grade right now. Right. Now, that is brought down largely by that 43 overall grade in week one. But he hasn't had any truly elite performances. Yeah, week three against San Francisco, that was when he made that incredible comeback and he made some big throws. But he's just missing. He's not connecting down the field like he has in the past. I think he does in this game. I think this is, last year, Rodgers had four games where he graded above 90 actual game grades. Hasn't had one this year. It hasn't been above 81. I think Rodgers carves him up, as you said. Yeah. So I think it's a dominant. I think it's starting to feel like that dominant game from the Packers. I also want to call attention to AJ Dillon again, and just the Packers continue to show. Like, Rodgers only threw the ball 23 times last week. A couple scrambles on top of that. A couple sacks, but they didn't throw the ball a ton. They're another team that kind of has the run game when they need it, has those options, has the ability to win in different ways. And I just think Rodgers has a dominant game here.
Yeah, I'm vaguely surprised that this number, the spread, is as low as it is relative to some of these other games. I mean, there's 1 point difference between this game and the Baltimore-Cincinnati game that I think is actually a pretty close encounter. I think that Green Bay wins and covers this fairly handily.
Yeah. I'm with you. The Taylor Heinicke, you know, I don't know. The shine's, you lost a little bit of the shine.
Yeah, I mean, so he plays stylistically very similar to Ryan Fitzpatrick, which is volatile, which is capable of impressive play, which is also capable of terrible play. And for Fitzpatrick, it almost always shakes out to somewhere in the average realm over the course of a season. Heinicke is playing in a similar way, but it's not shaking out to average. It's shaking out to significantly worse than that right now. He's sort of riding this low wave of, like, the bad Fitzpatrick Heinicke style of play. I don't know if he's going to come back out of the other side of that, or if he's just going to skew. I mean, if he's going to be the player that skews in that Kyle Allen fashion of play, you know, like, there's talent there, you can create some big plays, there's going to be some impressive stuff, but ultimately you're just not actually that good overall.
The Packers remain banged up on the offensive line, so if you're looking for a path for the football team to cover or to potentially pull off the upset, once again, the number two pass rush grade in the NFL, it has not matched with what's happening on the back end, despite all the talent with Kendall Fuller and William Jackson and Cameron Curl and Landon Collins and all those guys. There's something off there, as you mentioned earlier. There's something off on the back end. I don't know if there's a week or two where it kind of comes together. And last year's, I mean, it's a lot of the same guys, plus William Jackson, right? I mean, it's a lot of the same players for Washington. At some point, do they just look like last year, where last year they were rushing the passer and just a little bit tighter on the back end, you know, with William Jackson coming in, say, for like Ronald Darby. That's the replacement. But the Packers' offensive line, still no David Bakhtiari. Josh Myers is hurt. Maybe you just get to Rodgers, you sack him a few times, and the football team keeps it close. I just feel like this is one of those games where Rodgers has a lot of success.
Heinicke's kind of play is fascinating. He has three games this year with multiple big-time throws and three games with none. He has three games with at least three turnover-worthy plays and three games with none.
That, like, is ridiculous, actually.
It's madness.
The Fitzpatrick volatility,
right
there.
Like, he's capable of anything on a given game. You're capable of a, like, middle-of-the-road Alex Smithian game where you do nothing of merit on either side. You keep the ball tight. You don't turn it over. You don't do anything good with it. Or he's capable with, like, a full Jameis, you know, big-time throws all over the place, turnover-worthy plays all over the place. Or the other end of the, like, the quadrant, right? Like a just nothing good but all terrible, or big time throws everywhere and no bad, like no mistakes, which is the game he had in the playoffs. Like, you could get literally anything from Taylor Heinicke on a given day, and so far it's all kind of almost all shaken out to just meh.
Yeah, like last week, no turnover-worthy plays, no big-time throws. In a game against Kansas City where you got to, you know, get the ball down the field to make some
plays. Right, but then you go back to that Giants game, and that was three big-time throws, no turnover-worthy plays. That was the game where you come out of it going, ooh, maybe Taylor Heinicke can actually be the future there.
We were, like, excited there.
He has been. He can be literally anything in a given game.
All right, I'm taking the Packers to win and cover. It sounded like you were too.
Yeah.
All right. Let's go Colts at the San Francisco 49ers. This is Sunday Night Football, right?
You tell me. You did this.
I didn't add the Sunday Night Football. I'm pretty sure it's Sunday Night Football.
I see.
Niners are favored by 4 against the Colts. Carson Wentz is hot, coming off the highest grade of his career last week.
It is Sunday Night
Football. Sunday Night Football. Jimmy Garoppolo? Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be starting. Trey Lance is banged up, too. He's hurt.
No, it's not surprising since they hammered him in the last game.
Yeah, he's got a knee, but they're coming off the bye. I didn't think he was an issue to play. But, yeah, so Jimmy G's 49ers favored by 4 against the Colts. What do you make of this one?
Carson Wentz has been really good the last couple of weeks. Last week was the highest single game grade of Carson Wentz's career.
That's really good, yeah.
Like that impressive 2017 MVP type of season? Nope. This game last week was the highest single game grade of his entire career. Which leads me to the only inevitable conclusion that Carson Wentz currently has all of the ginger talent available.
Ah.
Which explains why Sam Darnold has been playing badly in recent weeks.
Ah, the ginger theory comes back again.
Yeah.
Somebody threw a curveball into that. Wasn't there some non-QB that had all of it early in the season? Because Wentz and Dalton and nobody had it. Or did Darnold have it? So Darnold maybe just had it all the first 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Now Wentz has it.
Now Wentz got it.
And Dalton's benched.
Uh-huh.
And Carson Palmer's still retired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's all Wentz.
Do you guys remember the ginger theory?
If you don't, this means nothing to you. This is just bad podcasting.
This is way back, PFF NFL podcast. Somebody suggested that there's only so much ginger talent to go around in the NFL.
Yeah.
And we hit this amazing stretch where it kind of like made sense. It was like when Andy Dalton was playing well, no one else with red hair was. And it just, you know, Sam Darnold had that 4 week stretch that one year and like Wentz was hurt. It was the year that Wentz was hurt and couldn't play. Oh, the theory is amazing. So Wentz has the ginger talent. So then if Wentz has it, when we get to the Panthers game, they've got no shot. Is that right?
Yeah.
Against the Giants?
Pretty much.
Great.
So look, it's tough to draw conclusions from one game sample sizes, but T.Y. Hilton coming back to this offense last week presented Wentz with something that he hasn't really had for most of his career, which is a viable guy that can win on the outside with speed and a potential deep threat, and like also a real extra thing that this offense hasn't had. It's going to be really interesting to see if that keeps going. Like this week, does T.Y. Hilton's presence bring the best out of Carson Wentz and also make this offense generally more dangerous across the board? Because if you're Frank Reich, like looking at how things are going right now, okay, the Colts are not in the best position in the world overall, but you hitched your wagon to this idea of resuscitating Wentz's career. And that part looks like it's going quite well recently.
Yeah, Colts are 19th in our power rankings. And, you know, you've been referencing strength of schedule remaining a little bit, 26th. You know, so on the easier side as far as strength of schedule goes. I keep pointing back to that Ravens game, though, man. I think Colts fans would feel pretty good if they were 3-3, or better at least, if they were 3-3. Despite all the offensive line issues, and I think it's fair analysis, you know, looking at Wentz, given how bad he was last year, the injury. Remember, he missed some of training camp because of the injury and everything, and saying, yeah, maybe it was going to take a few weeks for him to get comfortable in the whole thing, but it's starting to come together. And it, like again, early in the year, I just wanted to make sure that Carson Wentz wasn't completely broken, right?
You
just want to make sure that he's not. And you're right. It is trending in the right direction, and he is playing well. And but because they're 2-4, it's a little under the radar. And I think that makes the Colts, you know, sneaky dangerous in this game against the Niners.
That Ravens game, I mean, it was such a missed opportunity for them. They could be 3-3, one game back from Tennessee, in good position to be chasing wild card spots with a quarterback that's trending up, with receivers that are getting back. And all of a sudden, you're like, hey, the Colts are actually going to be, you know, dangerous. They're going to be a playoff team. Now, I mean, it's still possible. It's not like it's dead and buried for them, but, you know, such a difference between where they could have been and where they actually are.
Yeah, the T.Y. Hilton thing helps. The Colts have the number 20 receiving grade, and I spent all offseason saying they're just not good enough on the perimeter. But Michael Pittman, he did take a step forward. I always put that caveat in there, like, if you get better play from Michael Pittman. And T.Y. adds the element that he brings. Mo Alie-Cox, who you mention every week. The run game's been solid. Jonathan Taylor's been a big play threat. Paris Campbell's even showed up making big plays when he's been healthy. So maybe the sum of the parts is a little bit better than just the pieces there, right? Maybe the sum is getting there, and that's going to make, again, I think the Colts are a dangerous team going forward here.
Yeah, I think they definitely are. I'm kind of fascinated to see if it was just a one or two game sample size, yeah, or if this is actually a trend, and that the only way of doing that is extra games. Poor old Blackmon tears his Achilles in a Wednesday practice.
Safety Julian Blackmon, starter for the Colts.
Yeah.
Practice torn ACL.
Yeah, that sucks. It does. I mean,
the defense has not been good this year.
I haven't checked on actual injury numbers, but man, there seems to be a lot of those popping up recently. Just guys dropping like flies.
Yeah, and I don't know if there are trends there. I don't know. You know, last year we would blame COVID or something. You know, would say, oh, they didn't have training camp as much, or they didn't have a preseason or whatever. Like, there's no specific excuse, I don't think, for more injuries this year.
Well, particularly not for things like Achilles tears. Like,
yeah,
the things that trend injuries are typically like muscle injuries. Those are the sort of things that you can actually make a material difference in preventing with, you know, load management and all those kinds of things. I mean, Achilles tears and stuff appear to be largely random from what I can work out. Like, yeah, they just happen sometimes.
Colts defense, fifth worst EPA per play allowed from a coverage standpoint. Blackman's not going to help that with the injury. So that has been, as encouraged as I am with the way Wentz and the offense is trending, the defense has been rough. And they were, and this is with, you know, the Davis Mills game last,
yeah,
week, where they had some turnovers and everything.
And I'm interested, like, Jimmy G coming back. We know that the second Jimmy G is not 100% healthy, he's terrible. So do we get, like, is this 100% healthy Jimmy G, or is this just, like, he's good enough to go and it's going to be ugly? Now, it's been pretty ugly anyway, but yeah, it could be catastrophic if he's not, like, 100% back.
These both, you and I last night, I think we were talking about, like, who are the teams kind of on the fringe? They're not the best teams in the league, but they're going to, I keep using the word dangerous going forward. Both teams kind of fit into that bucket, right? Like, the Niners feel like the team, because you've got Shanahan creating offense. They did a really nice job defensively against the Cardinals a couple weeks ago. They did the best job against this Cardinals offense a couple weeks ago. The Niners are going to be that pesky team, I think, for the rest of the year. I don't know if they end up making the playoffs, but we thought that they were a playoff contender early, and I don't think we should lose sight of that. When they are all healthy offensively with Debo and Kittle and Jimmy G and Trey Lance and the whole deal, they're not bad. I mean, they're a tough team, and that's why they're favored by four here. So where are you leaning in this one?
I will go. I'm buying into the Colts thing. I think that they
me too,
will,
man.
I think that they'll win.
I struggle with their defense.
Green line, by the way, is the opposite. Green line thinks that there is. I'm right.
They're going Colts.
Yeah, green line thinks that the line should be closer to Indianapolis than it is. So they buy in as well.
Our forecast friends would say better quarterback getting points, and right now Carson Wentz is the better quarterback.
Yeah,
getting points.
Not just the better, but by a long margin at this point, right?
Let's go Indy.
Like, it's an 80 grade for Carson Wentz against whatever the hell Jimmy G has right now.
Low 60s for Jimmy G?
Jimmy G has a grade of 60.8.
There you go.
58.3 as a passer.
Yeah. So there you go. Carson Wentz. Jimmy G will be better than that, though. He should be playing better than that. What's our next game here?
Yes.
Atlanta Falcons at the Miami Dolphins. The Falcons are favored by 2.5. Talked about the Dolphins maybe as the most disappointing team in the league. Dolphins today on the daily, because you got to talk about Deshaun Watson because he's in the news again, potentially getting traded to the Miami Dolphins. The rumors are hot and heavy there. And the rumors, there are strong rumors.
Not the turn of phrase I would have used, but.
Nope. I immediately regret that.
Roll on.
There are rumors that Deshaun Watson could end up in Miami.
Uh huh. Yep.
Cut that line. Cut it.
Uh-huh.
Whatever. Anyway, Falcons by 2.5.
Do you think that, like,
Tua was on the trading block?
Is this just like an orchestrated troll job by reporters to be like, tell you what, in 2 weeks' time, you get to tweet the Deshaun Watson to Miami is done thing, and then 2 weeks' time, I'll do it, and then 2 weeks' time, somebody else? Like, it just feels like I mean, look, maybe it's just me, but my prior has been all along, I don't understand how you could possibly execute this deal when the team selling wants to get full value for the guy they're selling. The team buying would have to give full value to achieve that. And the giant elephant in the room looming over all of this is that he has at least 20 civil and several criminal lawsuits hanging over him. I don't understand how you can execute a deal under those circumstances. So from my perspective, it's never going to have been, it's at no point in this whole process has it ever been likely that this deal will get done. But every couple of weeks, those rumors keep coming back, and it's like, hey, the deal to Miami is done again. And every time, it's not like, hey, they've started talking, or they're like, it's like, oh, it's done. It's about to happen. Brace yourselves.
And we respond to all of them.
Well, you kind of have to, right? I mean, it's the news, but I just don't understand how this deal can happen. And therefore, I don't understand why it keeps coming back into the news as a report that is going to happen from people who are clued in. Like, legitimate, you know, respected beat reporters are dropping this nugget every couple of weeks. And you're like, well, what? How is this happening? Anyway. Whether or not it happens, to me, the most interesting part of the game is Tua. Like, he is supposed to be the quarterback of the future in Miami. Potentially, that is no longer the case. Whether it is or it isn't, he now needs to show pretty quickly that he has a future as a starter in the NFL. Whether it's for Miami or whether it's for a new team after he gets drop-kicked out of the building because they've traded for Deshaun Watson. So Tua's coming off maybe the best game of his career in London against the Jags, even though they lost. But we are really low on impressive play from Tua over the course of his career.
For sure.
He needs to build on last week. He needs to replicate last week and ideally do it without, like, randomly throwing the ball to nobody when you could have picked up a first down. And just start showing that, like, you actually have a future here.
You're a big, like, we can't glean anything from that type of guy.
From what?
You just pick stuff to not glean things from, weather games or whatever. So if he, you know, if he rips apart the Falcons this week, good game against the Jags, good game against this Falcons defense, are you going to glean anything from that? Or are you just going to say it's against a bad defense?
Well, I mean, it would be a step in the right direction. So far, you haven't been able to trust him doing that to anybody.
We just want any steps.
Yeah. If he can have a good game against Jacksonville, a flawed but good game, including, you know, the end result being a defeat, and then have another good game against Atlanta, like, all you can do is take baby steps at this point. Like, if Tua got traded tomorrow and you were the team picking him up, you would have zero confidence that this guy is a starting caliber NFL quarterback based off what we know from him so far, right? Yep. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Like, none.
Jury's out. We don't know.
Correct. It's not that he can't be. It's that we haven't seen anything to date to suggest that he is. So all he can do is start giving you signs that he can do that. Now, if you look at last week, there was a material difference in how good the offensive line looked when he's back there and how good Jalen Waddle looks, and the things that they're capable of doing when he's in the lineup versus Jacoby Brissett. So he is making a bad situation look slightly better. That is something in his favor. He also had a pretty good game throw by throw. That is also in his favor. Yeah. He can do that again this week. If he can do it again next week. Like, all he can do is start giving you small pieces of information that says there is a future in him as a starting quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, you have to start seeing multiple positive games put together by Tua here. I like what you're saying about Waddle. the pass blocking remains an issue. Again, even though you said, I mean, it's the lowest pass blocking grade in the NFL.
Oh, it's terrible. I'm just saying it looks slightly better when he's there than when
he gets rid of the ball half a second faster.
Right, which is why it looks better.
Which is huge.
But these are good things. Like, this
absolutely.
Is,
absolutely.
You need quarterbacks. We always talk about quarterbacks being able to elevate the play of everybody around them. And usually we're talking about, you know, the Tom Brady's of the world. But there's also a way of, like, limiting the damage that everybody else is doing around you. And if Tua shows that he can do that to a much better degree than a guy who we know is a high-level but career backup, that's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, protecting the offensive line is part of that making people look better type of deal. So, yeah, I'm intrigued by the Tua storyline. Falcons, I think the Falcons are slowly, maybe creeping back toward average across the entire roster.
See, I think they've just been, like, forced to throw the ball at their best players for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're doing some smart things offensively, using motion and various things like that, tapping into what Kyle Pitts can do, and I think they'll figure out how to get Calvin Ridley back involved. So Matt Ryan's throwing the ball better in recent weeks. Perhaps that's just because what they played the Jets and what was the other The other team that they played wasn't great a couple weeks ago, right?
I wonder if
against Washington. So I mean, he's beat up. He's had his two best passing games against Washington and the Jets, sure, but Ryan's not completely cooked, right? Got Calvin Ridley, you got Kyle Pitts, you got Cordero Patterson. I don't know. I mean, the ingredients are there. Can they make the meal out of
it? So I wonder if it's easier sometimes to figure out how best to deploy your offensive weapons if you only have one or two. Like, remember the Eagles receiving core. Man for man is actually a pretty good group, but they don't seem to be able to figure out how it goes together as a jigsaw and creates like a great receiving group as a like a whole. The sum of the parts is weaker than it should be. Whereas, and I think that was the same thing that we were seeing from Atlanta earlier in the season. Like, you have Kyle Pitts, who is an insane weapon. You have Calvin Ridley. You have Cordero Patterson. You've got actually quite a lot of impactful, talented playmakers, but why are they not good together? And then all of a sudden, when you start losing some guys, and now it's like, okay, now all you have is Cordero Patterson and Kyle Pitts, suddenly the thing looks great. Because it's like, well, essentially there's no choice anymore. We have to play Kyle Pitts as like our number one wide receiver because we don't have anybody else. And Cordero Patterson has to start becoming a part of this game as well. I wonder if it's just easier that way, and when you start adding more pieces, it becomes difficult. But potentially they've learned through no choice what they had in Kyle Pitts and Cordero Patterson, which might make it easier to then reintegrate a guy like Calvin Ridley, who you should have a pretty good idea of what he does as well.
Yeah, for perspective, Ridley's season, he's been targeted 42 times. That still leads the team, but it's 27 catches for 255 yards. That's 9.4 yards per attempt. That's like a bad tight end number as far as, you know, just yards per reception, sorry. So he's been a guy through his career, and then, you know, you've got the Julio on the other side factor. He averages 12, 13, 15 in his other seasons. In last year in particular, a big play threat. Ridley's a great route runner. He can run routes the short, intermediate level. He can win down the field.
I mean, his average depth of target is almost 5 yards less this year than last year.
Right, so it's a usage. It's not like, oh, Ridley just doesn't know how to like run routes now. It's a usage pattern thing. And I just wonder if we should give Arthur Smith and the Falcons offense a little bit of leeway and say they're figuring out that jigsaw puzzle, and now they've got Ridley back. And on paper, it's like, wow, I've got Cordero Patterson playing, you know, the way he's playing, and Pitts and Ridley. Like, we should be able to make this work. As long as, you know, Ryan's arm certainly looks bad at times, but can he get the ball to receivers that are open? Yeah, he could still do that for the most part. So I like the way the Falcons are trending, man. I don't like the way the Dolphins are trending, especially defensively. So I'm taking the Falcons to cover on the road here. Cover the 2.5.
And win or?
And win.
Okay.
They're favored.
This is true.
They're favored by 2.5.
So they will probably
Miami's getting 2.5.
Yeah, the number. Yeah.
In Miami.
Yeah.
It's an outdoor game for Matt Ryan, though. Watch out.
But it's Florida weather. Is that
it's a little humid, you know?
Does that hurt the ball?
It could rain. You never know when the thunderstorms will show up.
Rain's going to show up.
What's Miami? Can somebody check Miami weather for us and drop it in the YouTube chat?
Yeah, I'll go with an Atlanta win as well.
All right, let's go Carolina Panthers at the New York Giants. The Panthers are favored by 3. Panthers, you know, lost 3 in a row after their 3-0 start. And the Giants coming off that rough beatdown by the Los Angeles Rams, where Daniel Jones' overall PFF grade dropped by about 10 points.
More than 10 points. At like almost 15. The Rams are going to single-handedly cost me lunch.
Yeah,
in our bet.
Told you it wasn't going to grade above 80.
I swear to God, if that game is the difference between me winning or losing,
it's going
to
be like an 88.
I am going
minus
so
the
mad.
One game.
Send him out there with his scrambled brain against Aaron Donald and the Rams.
Stop it, scramble. He was
and drop his grade 15 points.
Concussion protocol is binary. He was
binary. No, look, that
he
man
was cleared.
That man had his.
You're
noodle.
Either cleared or you're concussed. He was cleared.
That man had his noodle scrambled, and now we're just like, oh, no, what's the worst that could happen?
Cleared.
Well, the worst that could happen is he goes out there and just starts throwing the ball to Taylor Rapp as if they've had a number one receiver connection for his entire life.
Well, guess what? Andrew Thomas is going to play again at left tackle.
Excellent.
According to my depth chart here, are they going to move Nate Solder back over to the left side, Matt Parrott to play right tackle? So they've got issues. And I mean, regardless, Nate Solder, Matt Skura, and Billy Price are all grading under 50 overall on that offensive line. Parrott had his ups and downs in his year two here as a backup. And you're facing a Panthers team with Brian Burns, with Hassan Reddick, with one of the better schemes as far as creating unblocked pressure so far this season. So might be more pressure. The thing that Daniel Jones did last week that was the thing that hadn't shown up for a while that he does, holding the ball a tick too long.
Yeah, and the reason fumbling it hadn't in shown the pocket up is because the offensive line had been trending in the right direction. All of a sudden, yeah, he had like a viable platform to work from. Now all that disappears, and we're back to the preseason story, which is Daniel Jones might be playing better, but you're not going to know about it because everything around him is bad.
Yeah,
and that's the situation we're now faced with. Like Carolina have two of the most devastating speed, quickness, pass rushers in the league, and now the Giants don't have anybody that can block them. So game over.
And the guys they have, Nate Solder, he's about my size. Matt Parrott, 6'7", like you're guys who struggle with pad level and quicks on the edge.
Yeah.
So the tackle situation could be an issue for the Giants in this one.
I would imagine it would be a large issue for them, at which point the Giants are dead.
Now, this is I'm going to hear you talking against yourself here, because you're anti-Giants offensive line. You're also anti-Sam Darnold. So what's gonna give here? Not anti, but you just...
I mean, why can't those two things...
Well, because one of the teams has to win and one of the teams has to cover. So how...
Right.
The Giants getting beat up at the line of scrimmage... Certainly a possibility, but what do you make of Darnold, who has now settled up? Here's our Darnold update. He now has a 65 overall grade. His previous season grades, 64.7, 63, 58, 65. He is very much in Sam Darnold range now after these last three games. By the way, all these stats and grades over at Premium Stats, part of your PFF Elite Package, which you can get for 25% off using the promo code NFLPOD. NFLPOD, 25% off. And you can read the Sam Darnold grades right here with me. So, even the raw stats that we thought would be better, he's now got a passer rating under 80.
Uh-huh.
And things have fallen apart a little bit for Darnold over these last few weeks.
I don't understand why these things can't perfectly coexist, that the Giants' offensive line and the Giants' offense will be wretched and they will lose the game because of it. And Sam Darnold will also not be very good, but they will win anyway.
Okay. You think that's what's going to happen?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think at this point, three games, Sam Darnold looked really good. The offense looked really good. On the other hand, they were, you know, pretty crappy opposition. Three games against better opposition and Darnold looks bad. Now, do you come out of that and say, do you like overreact to the starting three games and then overreact to the second three games? Or do you just say, like, this is probably the same guy he's always been? I would tend to say he's probably the same guy he's always been, at which point, like, he's unlikely to have an
amazing
game.
I really wanted to be encouraged by his development. And you know, those first 3 weeks, somebody posed the question, is this what he looked like at USC? I mean, yeah, he hit some open throws and short and intermediate stuff, but he's run into a decent Dallas defense. Again, an Eagles defense that has had some good, some bad games, you know, however you want to weigh that. And they made Darnold look bad in that particular game. And then a Minnesota defense, which, by the way, second best EPA per play now. Minnesota's defense allowed. All of a sudden, the Zimmer D is back, and that's what Darnold had to face last week. I think he'll have more success against this Giants defense this week. Yeah, so I'm liking where the Panthers are trending. Even not their last three games in this matchup. I like where they are in this matchup. I think their passing offense against the Giants, their pass rush against the Giants offensive line. I don't like where they're trending losing last three.
If there's one thing that says a team's on the up and up, it's three straight defeats.
I mean, the Panthers might just be, you know, win three, lose three. And this is the start of the next three-game winning streak.
Okay.
It could happen.
Sure.
That could be it. I like the Panthers here.
Yeah, like
apparently, we have to stop hitting the table. These things are reverberating.
Well, gosh. They're supposed to have, like, in-microphone, you know,
apologies,
suspension things to prevent that happening, but apparently they don't. Or they do, they just don't work very well.
We'll work on it. We'll work on any audio
this
issues.
This is a very, like, it's a very, this table encourages elbows on it.
Yeah.
It's very difficult.
I think you can lean, just try not to hit. I don't know.
So just like slamming your hand on the table would be bad?
Yeah, don't do that.
Okay.
So Chris does all the time.
A lot of the time.
Yeah. Somebody's got to, like, what do you say, tie his hands up when he's talking, Chris?
We're like pad the table.
Oh, there you go. Can we get some table pads in here? All right, where are you going in this one? You think the Panthers win?
Yeah.
And cover the three?
Yep.
All right, I'm with you. Have we agreed on everything here?
Give me all kinds of crap. And then you're just like, yeah, I think the same.
New York Jets at the New England Patriots. Patriots favored by 7 at home. Patriots are 2-4. And this was the only game they've won handily this year, was a game against the Jets in New York. So they will finish. This is the last time they'll play each other. They'll get both of their games done within 7 weeks. And 7-point spread for the Patriots at home here.
Yeah.
See if they can win their first game at home.
Sure. I think it's time to take the training wheels off Mac Jones to get that done.
Absolutely.
Like, he has been the most impressive rookie quarterback in the NFL this year. He was the most impressive rookie quarterback in preseason, and you don't trust him to do anything. Like, you mailed in, you sacrificed a possession to go to halftime rather than let Mac Jones play the game. Now, look, I'm not saying it's risk-free. Mac Jones has had more turnover-worthy plays than you would like for a guy that's been executing the paint-by-numbers offense that they're letting him run. But he's also been good. Like, he's been really efficient right up until he commits a turnover-worthy play, and then really efficient up until the next one. So, yeah, look, it's not perfect.
Really efficient up until the next one. It is weird. Like, he just doesn't miss a ton of plays.
Right.
He does not
have
a lot of
his baseline is extremely high, and then it's punctuated by, like,
right
bad
here.
Mistakes. But at some point, like, what if he's able to maintain that level of efficiency with higher productive plays? Like, if you let him attack more, maybe his turnover-worthy play rate doesn't change at all, but you increase the baseline, and he's able to maintain his efficiency with plays that will gain more yardage, have a greater effect on winning, and all of a sudden you just increase your overall efficiency on offense without any downside to it.
Mac Jones has the 11th lowest percentage of negatively graded plays. So he's been pretty good at avoiding negatives. He's actually 11th in positives as well.
Yeah.
So he's been pretty good in both areas. He has generally avoided mistakes, but like I said, when the mistakes come, there's
so
a lot
of stop treating him
in the
like
coverage.
A guy that needs to be desperately protected from himself and just let him play quarterback. Like, you drafted the guy in the first round for a reason. Now, maybe you decided that you just couldn't pass up the quarterback that slid to that spot. Whatever the reason, this is the guy that is the future of your offense, so start acting like it.
I think part of the problem with what the Patriots are seeing, though, the game where they probably were most aggressive with him was the Saints game. They lose 28-13, and just that was ugly as far as their passing attack goes. They tried to throw the ball down the field, couldn't connect on anything. So there have been spurts, and look, they dropped back 56 times in that game. Against Tampa Bay, in the rain, they dropped back 45 times. There have been games where they did feel like they took the training wheels off. For whatever reason, the last couple weeks against Houston, where they did pull off the win, a lot more conservative in that game, and really only 23 dropbacks against the Dallas Cowboys team that we just ranked as the best offense in the league that you have to keep up with from a scoring standpoint,
right.
And that was not what the Patriots tried to do.
You're not winning anyway playing with the training wheels method, right? Your two wins are against the Houston Texans team that's one of the worst in the NFL, and the Jets. So, like, what's the downside to being more aggressive and saying, okay, we're probably not winning this season anyway, let's at least get Mac Jones on the development path and see if next year he can be something good. Like, there's no point in rolling through this season getting 6 wins with this, like, hyper-conservative, like, kiddies offense. Like, what are we doing here?
On the other side, you've got Zach Wilson. The Jets are coming off a bye. They lost over in London against the Falcons a couple weeks ago. Zach Wilson only has 1 game grade over 70. Last time he faced the Patriots, the stat line was horrendous, but it wasn't. He had 2 turnover-worthy plays, 4 interceptions. There was some bad luck in there as well, but he was turning it over pretty much every pass in that particular game. So Wilson really showed off his potential in that one game against Tennessee, where he had 4 big-time throws. He was getting the ball down the field, making big plays. Davis Mills had a decent rookie game against New England a couple weeks ago. Can Wilson do it in this one, or is it gonna look as bad as it was back in week 2?
Yeah, I mean, I think the likelihood of that is bad rather than good. You know, Davis Mills turning out to be the one rookie quarterback that has Bill Belichick's number was something I don't think anybody expected. So it's probably not happening for Zach Wilson either.
The number that stands out negatively for me with Wilson, he's been sacked 19 times, but 3.11 time to throw, that snap to release time that we cite a lot. And if you're up in the three range, you almost certainly have to be a guy who's special outside of the pocket. And he has elements of that, right? But special outside of the pocket, in general, it's usually a guy that's going to scramble a lot, right? That's why that number is so high. Wilson feels like the type of guy who has to live at 2.7, 2.8, and it's like there's got to be a better balance of winning within structure and then having those outside of structure plays. Wilson has not hit that balance.
No.
Just yet.
I mean, he's... Even if you like strip out scrambles and things, he's 2.95 seconds.
It's too long. It's just too long.
The only quarterback in the NFL longer than that is Trey Lance, who isn't really a passing quarterback at this point. Like, Zach Wilson, it's way, way, way too long. Like, Lamar Jackson is at 2.85 seconds. Like, Taysom Hill, when he drops back, is at 2.8. Jalen Hurts is 2.75. Like, you're 0.2 of a second longer than quarterbacks that live in that world of scrambling around behind the line of scrimmage and extending plays and making things happen outside of structure. You can't be that guy yet. You're not good enough yet to do that. Maybe, I know, see, this is that's what you did at BYU, and that's why everybody loved you, and that's why we like the idea of what you could do under pressure or outside of structure. But like Texas Tech Patrick Mahomes, you need to live inside of structure for the majority of your time, and that's the question mark. Like, can you do that? And so far, he hasn't been able to, which is a little bit strange, and yet it kind of highlights the difference between preseason and the regular season. Like, he looked comfortable in those situations
really
in preseason,
yeah,
and just doesn't now.
There's really no unit grading well on the Jets at the moment, other than their pass rush. They do have the number 8 pass rushing unit in the NFL. And that, in the, you know, again, we talk a lot about the quarterbacks and Wilson and all that stuff. Pass blocking has been just okay. Receiving unit has largely disappointed despite some of the additions there with Corey Davis, with Elijah Moore. You're just not getting the production there. 7 points, though, for a 2-4 Patriots team. Vegas has a lot of faith in the Patriots, not so much in the Jets. Where are you leaning on this one?
That way, the Patriots, not the Jets.
I'm going Patriots as well. One of these weeks, though, I think Wilson said it with Trevor, too. I think it's going to click. Timing's going to get a little bit better. Things are going to click. We'll see which week it is. New Orleans Saints at the Seattle Seahawks. This one's Monday Night Football before we get into the four games that have the massive spreads. Seahawks are getting 4.5 at home against the Saints. Saw the Seahawks lose on Sunday Night Football, 23-20 to the Steelers. Saints are coming off a bye. What are you looking for in this game?
This feels like a game where, like, the Saints need to actually stake a claim for a playoff spot. Like, the last one or two wild card spots in the NFC are kind of up for grabs right now. There's a bunch of teams that aren't really looking like contenders but are going to make the playoffs. Like, some of them are.
Yeah.
The Saints are 3-2 with losses to Carolina when they had, like, half the coaching staff missing and players as well. And the Giants, like, what?
I feel like I'm not going to know about the Saints until I see them play the Bucs once or twice. That's just my feeling on the Saints, because last year the Saints beat the Bucs handily during the regular season and then played them pretty close in the playoff game and lost, but they were competitive. I mean, they were right there with the Super Bowl champion Bucs. They were a better team for most of the season. I want to see if the Jameis-led Saints can compete with that level of the Bucs. Are they still at that level, at least defensively, to hang? And I don't know if we're going to know much about the Saints, especially with no Russ here in the Seattle game.
No, but this is like, you know, the Seahawks were supposed to be one of those playoff teams. Without Russ, they're probably not. I mean, obviously without Russ permanently, they're not. But without Russ, even for a period of time, they're probably not. Like, this is a team that if you're the Saints and you do have real playoff aspirations, you need to just go in there and win and, you know, do it comfortably.
DK Metcalf versus Marshawn Lattimore. That's the matchup I'm looking for. Marshawn Lattimore having a good bounce back season. We had talked a lot about he's always been talented, always been skilled, just given up a lot more in coverage the last couple of years than his skill level would indicate. But that matchup, I think, I want to see a lot of that. Geno Smith, the Seattle offense got back into the game through the run game, right, in the second half the other night. Geno only threw 7 passes beyond the line of scrimmage. How aggressive will Seattle be with Geno Smith? They were a lot of third and long screens. They were not putting a lot on his plate. But he threw the ball pretty well. Like when they opened it up, he did make some decent throws.
The idea that there was like that before Geno playing, everybody was like, what if without Russ they open this up and they start calling the, you know, more pass plays and the beneficial stuff.
You
and
were
blah,
saying
blah.
That.
Well, everybody. No, I was repeating the narrative.
I got you.
But like, this is a team that's hyper conservative when Russell Wilson is your quarterback. You think they're going to get expansive when Geno's the guy? No, this is a team that's going to go back into their shell and barely allow him to throw the football.
Harry, my 6-year-old, is just enthralled with our. He likes looking at timers.
Okay.
And setting alarms. He set all sorts of alarms on my iPad. I was like, you can't set alarms because they're just going to randomly go off on a podcast at some point.
And there we go.
And maybe he's trying to get me to move along and talk quicker.
That's possible.
Yeah. Do we have any other timers here, Harry? I have an 8-hour timer just randomly on there.
Okay.
So something went off. Time's up. What else do you want to see in the Saints? So the matchup-wise, I want to see DK Lattimore. I want to learn more about the Saints because, like you said, it feels, you know, after that week one domination, they dominated the Packers. Like the further we get away from week one, you just like forget about those games. So that's their signature win, and it was quite the signature. But it's just been such a roller coaster ride for the Saints. I mean, that's the Jameis coaster, however you want to define that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You're obviously always fascinated in Jameis Winston, but this is a game you need to win if you're the Saints and need to like look reasonable doing it. This is a team that wants to make the playoffs, has playoff aspirations, is dangerous if they get there, but this is the kind of game you need to pick up and not be concerned by.
Oh, I hate picking Jameis games. Seattle's defense still has some serious issues, though. They're getting 4.5. It's at home. They play. I'm going to take Seattle to cover because of the, you know, it's just the Seattle fact. Seattle in primetime, of course it's going to be close, right? Of course it's going to be within 3.
Yeah, well,
that's
they
the
always,
rule.
Always play weird games.
That is the rule. So Seattle's going to cover, but Saints are going to win.
That does seem like the most likely outcome.
Right?
Yeah.
And we're allowed to do that. You're allowed to take underdogs to cover and lose. That's what happens. All right, the three big lopsided games. You got the Houston Texans and the Arizona Cardinals. This is the DeAndre Hopkins, David Johnson trade here. Spend some stories about that.
Are we still on the fence as to that one? The winner who won that trade?
No.
We decided yet?
Feel pretty good about the way the Cardinals have ended up in that. Apparently, David Johnson took that hard. He's had some. There's an article about he had to went to therapy and various things like that because of all the lopsided analysis on that trade. So, I don't know. I just saw that come across the Twitter timeline recently. The residual effect of what we do here, analyzing trades and the whole deal. But the actual trade itself, you've got the best. I mean, the problem is the best wide receiver in the NFL, DeAndre Hopkins at the time, got traded for a second-round pick.
And a running back.
And a running back, no matter how good the running back is, unless it's the exception, Derrick Henry,
yes,
is just never going to be put in a position to return the same value as a DeAndre Hopkins. And now you see what the Arizona Cardinals have done year one in the Kyler Murray kind of rebuild deal. Or not even just building around him. Year one was at DeAndre Hopkins. Year two is at Rondale Moore and A.J. Green. And it's just all working extremely well for the Cardinals right now.
Yeah. I mean, look, running back, I kind of feel bad for running backs generally. Again, unless you're the exception, Derrick Henry. But it's a crappy position to be playing now. It's maybe the most attritional position in the NFL. You guys get beat up more than anybody else. Again, unless you're the exception, Derrick Henry, you are not the thing that's driving all of this. You are just a passenger who picks up yardage and production based largely off factors outside of your concern or your influence. And because of that, you're not worth the money. So it's like arguably the hardest position in the NFL to play physically. Like obviously quarterback is the hardest position to play mentally and everything they need to do. But like nobody gets beat up as bad as running backs, and you shouldn't be giving them the money. So if you're like, it's just a crap position to play now. Like, yeah. Don't play running back. Okay, it's great you're in high school and great in college when you're just better athletes than everybody else and you can drive the whole offense. But once you get to the NFL, the things don't work the same way. So you're not going to get the money that you deserve for the incredible athlete and playmaker that you are. Go play something else. Play wide receiver. Play cornerback. Like, play a position where you can get paid what you deserve.
Play more valuable positions. So this line, Arizona 17.5 over the Texans. What are we at least watching in this particular game?
Potentially our last look at Davis Mills before Tyrod gets back.
You think so?
I would imagine
so. They put Tyrod back in?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because they're not very good with Davis Mills as a quarterback.
It's more showcase games for the Texans. Our guy Brad Spielberger wrote an article this week about potential trades from AFC teams, and the first three are all Texans. Actually, the first five are all Texans because he put their entire backfield out there. And
every game the Texans play right now is just an advertising vehicle for trades.
Yes.
Okay.
Among the, you know, Brandon Cooks, wide receiver, right? I mean, he's their top wide receiver. He's a very good player. He's produced in multiple systems with multiple quarterbacks. Most of the quarterbacks have been good. He's played with Breeze and Brady and with McVay and Goff. So, yeah, Brandon Cooks could be a valuable asset. Whitney Mercilus has already been released and supposedly signing with the Green Bay Packers. I'm pretty sure that's going to be official. Brad suggests Vernon Hargraves could get traded. I might disagree that I don't know if I would want Vernon Hargraves, but... Again, the Texans should be open to all of this. So the weekly, until the trade deadline, everybody on the Texans is a trade candidate. And then, you know, Brad puts the entire backfield, Rex Burkhead, David Johnson, who we mentioned, Philip Lindsay, to running back needy teams. So that's what I'm looking for. It's the showcase game for the tradable Texans.
Yeah. I do wonder if there's a way that Davis Mills can win this job. Not because he plays incredibly, but like, what is the point in putting Tyrod Taylor back in? Other than you get a greater chance to win games this year, which are meaningless to you effectively. Now the only argument is that point that you bring up, like, can you have to be trying to win, and if you're putting Davis Mills out there versus Tyrod Taylor, you're probably not trying to win. You're trying to see what you have in Davis Mills and have the knock-on effect of likely improving your draft position, which doesn't really affect you, you know. It's just, but yet there's an argument that says, look, Davis Mills has looked better than you might have expected him to look at times so far. So why not spend the rest of the season figuring out if he has a long-term potential?
Arizona gets, this is their third AFC South team. So I like Arizona. I love the way they're playing. I think they've made strong statements in games against good teams, but now they have wins over Jacksonville. Yeah, they beat Tennessee pretty well. But win over Jacksonville is one of them. Probably a win over the Texans. I think things will get a little bit more difficult for Arizona. We'll see. But they're pretty much likely to go 7-0 here. Arizona with the 17.5 point favorite. So who's, are they going to cover this? Arizona at home?
I was just interested in like how close Green Line is to the number. You know, it's a 17.5 point spread.
It's like 17.9 or something.
17.2.
There you go.
So Texans Green Line cover. Thinks Vegas is in the right ballpark anyway.
So they would slight lean toward the Texans.
Slight lean towards the Texans, which is where the money and the tickets is coming. 71% of the money, 61% of the bets are going on Houston to cover that. I think just purely because it's such an absurdly large number.
Give me Arizona.
On the other hand, we are dealing with the number 4 ranked team versus the number 31 in PFF's power rankings, 8 versus 31 in offense, 5 versus 28 in defense. Like, there's a reason the line is that big.
I'll take Arizona.
To
cover it.
Cover?
Yeah.
To cover 17.5.
Just like the Bills covered.
God, that's a
16
lot of points.
A couple weeks ago.
That's like a full, that's 3 touchdowns.
I'm aware. Arizona hype through the roof again as they dominate the Houston Texans.
Ah.
By the way, what was it, 2 years, again, 2 years ago, the Bills were 18-point underdogs against the Vikings.
Hmm.
16, 17, 18, somewhere in that range, and they won.
Right, but they had Josh Allen.
They did.
The Texans have Davis Mills.
Mills has played solid for a third-round rookie.
He's not going to hurdle.
He's played solid for a third-round rookie.
He's not going to go out there and hurdle Zaven Collins and pick up an incredible first down out of nowhere.
He's at, like, Charlie Batch third-round rookie territory back in 98. Charlie was solid for a third-round rookie. Third-round rookie.
Yeah.
It's not easy.
I will also pick the Cardinals to cover.
All right. These alarms.
We're not capable of, like, muting this thing.
I have.
It's not like
I have my volume all the way down, so it should be. But I don't know. Harry's getting grounded. End timer. How many timers did he set here?
Oh God. All right.
I said alarms.
The next game, Detroit at the Los Angeles Rams, the Jared Goff revenge game.
You hosting now?
Yeah, because apparently you're too busy screwing around with timers on your iPad.
I need my iPad. It's my death chart.
Incapable of turning the sound off on it, so I have to take over. 15.5 point spread. This to me feels mean for Jared Goff. Like this is almost like bullying or harassment or some kind, like victimizing the man. You've already like embarrassed him, ridiculed him, shipped him out of town, dumped him, essentially got rid of his contract for a first round draft pick. Like you've essentially done everything possible to eviscerate the poor guy after you gave him the big contract, and you're like, no, Jared Goff's the face of our franchise, and then just get the hell out of here. Take your crap and move it over to Detroit. We want no part of you. You are so bad that we are going to trade all these first-round picks to get Matthew Stafford, of all people, because that is what we're missing in this building. Now, Goff is like a week removed from his own coach ripping him a new one, being like, okay, this isn't a great situation. On the other hand, Jared has to stop playing like crap. Paraphrasing,
of course, yes.
more or less. Now he's got to go on the road back to his old team, who are flying high and ripping everyone a new one, and presumably have the Daniel Jones treatment of just getting annihilated. Poor Jared.
Yeah, I feel
this is one of those games where, like, you know, is there a way he can like pull a sickie and, you know, I got food poisoning. You're gonna have to put in who's David Blau? Is there like you got to put in the backup? I can't go today.
We used to call that Colorado Springsitis. Remember I told you that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the 4-day bug. Ah, the four day shoulder twinge when you go to the ballpark that's a mile and a half above sea level and the ball flies. The shoulder just doesn't. It's barking. I mean, need to miss four games.
Yeah.
Jared needs one of those.
He does.
And look, it's a little Colorado Springsitis.
He's going back to his old building. He's going to end up going to the wrong sideline. It's going to get embarrassing for everybody.
Oh, gosh.
Like, he's going to get confused as to where the sun's rising. It's on the West Coast. Like, come on.
So.
You can't do this to him.
What if he just balls out?
What if
he just carries the Lions?
What are the odds?
Lions 15. Well, the Lions 15 and a half. Calculate those odds.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great.
What are they, probably like plus 1,000 to win? I don't know. So it's not a great game on paper. My big concern is every single week the Detroit Lions have a new cornerback depth chart with random undrafted free agents. Jerry Jacobs played actually a decent game last week. He's the undrafted free agent that will be starting this week at corner again. AJ Parker, another undrafted free agent starting opposite Amani Oruwariye. The secondary in Detroit is rough against a Rams team, highest EPA per play in the NFL, that has just been dominant. I mean, the Rams should score 40, and if they don't, it's a disappointment, right?
Yeah.
If the Rams just keep playing the way they have been?
I mean, I honestly think that, like, this is one of those games that has no recipe for success for Detroit. Like, they can't stop people anyway. The Rams have this incredibly potent offense, the highest explosive pass rate in the NFL, just crushing people left and right. And now they're going up against Jared Goff, who is not good anyway, but is going up against his former coach that knows his weaknesses, knows like how to attack him, just absolutely destroy what they're doing. I can't see any way this goes well.
Counterpoint, nobody knows the Rams system better than Jared Goff. He's going to be coaching up the Lions secondary.
The only way he knows it is like through what Sean McVay was telling him in the earpiece before 15 seconds.
Sean still get to talk to
right,
him
like, in this unless he's getting the feed through his ear, he's got no shot.
What if he gets up to, you said he's going to go to the wrong sideline. What if he's at the line? What'd you say, Sean?
Uh-huh.
Repeat that, Sean. Where are you? Sean.
Sean?
Did we ever have the think piece about does Sean talk to Matthew Stafford until there's 15 seconds left, or is Matthew's well beyond that?
I don't know. Well, the more interesting thing is, like, okay, he might be telling him things up until 15 seconds, but how much crap does Matthew Stafford change after the 15 seconds when Sean stops talking to him?
Stop. They position that whole thing like Jared Goff is some idiot who needs somebody to tell him everything to do.
Look.
And you buy into that, by the way.
I'm not going to call the man an idiot. On the other hand, he didn't know where the sun rose. I have an 8-year-old who's known where the sun rose for, like, most of her life at this point.
Proud of her.
She's known where the sun rose for longer in her life than she hasn't known that, and she's 8. Jared Goff was a fully grown human
who was
drafted
plays?
And a millionaire and didn't know where the sun rose.
What's that have to do with running football plays?
What does it have to do? You have to have like a reasonable basic level of like being able to operate as a human to be able to operate an offense.
You're just going to keep throwing the sun rising in his face.
The sun rising, then the fact that like he just did what Sean McVay told him to do and nothing else. Hey, here's the play. This is how it works. You throw it to that guy. But what if like things change? Nope, throw it to that guy. Go out there and do your job.
This is like your Wonderlic.
The man is like an automaton at quarterback. He is not like independently functional.
I was hoping he'd perform better, but it's such a bad situation in Detroit.
Yeah.
Which, it is such a bad situation.
Which his own coach acknowledged last week. He was like, yeah, this is not a good situation.
But also play better, Jared.
It's tough to analyze anybody. On the other hand, you got to start making some plays.
What if Dan is a secret genius? He lights a fire on... I'm taking... That's it. I'm changing my pick. I typed
Stop
in the Rams.
It.
Dan Campbell, secret motivational genius. Detroit's going to cover, not to win.
Jared Goff.
He's going to light a fire under Goff. Goff is going to go head-to-head with Stafford. It's going to be Rams 48, Lions... No, 40 to 38. Rams.
Jared Goff is quite clearly not the type of person that reacts to that as motivation and plays well. Like you're telling me.
Who are you picking?
His head coach goes out there, says, you know, this is not a good situation. On the other hand, our quarterback has to stop being so terrible. You're telling me he reacts to that by like, I'm going to show you. I'm going to go out there and ball out against you and my old coach. It's me against the world.
At least for 1 week.
No. Jared Goff is going to crawl into a small fetal position ball on the 25-yard line, in the huddle, and just cry himself to sleep in this game. That's what's going
to
happen.
And then go back to the wrong sideline.
Yes.
Sean, I miss you. Sean, can you call plays again?
Like, why is he playing in the
weekend? I got faith in Goff in this one. Jared Goff, TJ Hockenson, season.
David Blough is going to play some part in this game.
Oh, jeez. Detroit covers.
No, Detroit is not covering. The Rams are covering.
Probably not.
By a distance.
I've talked myself into it.
It's a 15.5-point point spread. It should be 20-something.
Let's see. One more game. Right? 13 on the week? Chicago Bears at the Tampa Bay Bucks. It's the last one that has a 10-plus point spread. Tampa Bay by 12.5. Bears have consistently one of the worst offenses in the league right now. Defense has been, you know, up and down. What are you looking for in this game?
So you know the way... Way back at the start of this podcast, one of the more interesting dynamics was Joe Burrow against the blitz. Number one graded quarterback in the NFL against a very blitz-happy Baltimore team. That was going to be interesting to see how this works out. This is the same, but at the other end of the spectrum. Only Davis Mills has been worse against the blitz than Justin Fields has. Tampa Bay is the number one blitz team in the NFL. They are number six in blitzes involving defensive backs. So they come after you a load. They come after you from various different angles and positions. And so far, Justin Fields has been terrible against that. If that happens, like this is the game that kind of has the potential to be the Browns game again for a slightly different reason, but same kind of idea. Like Justin Fields needs to improve a lot very quickly to avoid this becoming a disaster.
So this is going
to
be Todd Bowles just unleashing
hell.
The kitchen sink
on
Justin Fields.
Engage eight every play.
All right. So I on my...
No, what's the one where you send like the double safeties as well? Like that, everything.
Engage eight's the worst. I mean, it's everybody but the free... It's like three deep with just everybody else blitz, at least in Madden.
But there's one where you send the two free safeties as well. And you just everything up the middle.
Double safety blitz.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Bucks are going to get after him. And I'll have my same Fields take for like the last, for the fifth week in a row. That'll lead to some ugly, and he'll spin out of some and maybe make a spectacular throw or two.
Sure.
I don't think that's going to be enough. But, get to see a little bit more with the Fields development. And, look, he needs the reps against the blitz and being able to see all those different things. So it's a really good Bucks defensive front, which we know. The other part of this is Fields has not thrown the ball a ton in any game, really. Like, they have not... They've just tried to really balance the offense, right? They've really tried to run the ball and protect him as much as possible. Most teams have taken the opposite approach against the Bucs. They've put the ball in their quarterback's hands, no matter who the quarterback is, and said, we're not going to run into this defensive front. So it also has the makings of being a Bears, run-run pass game where Fields is in third and long the entire time. Like last week, he did have his career high in dropbacks. It was 37. But that's it, you know, 37. He was 16 for 27, got sacked a bunch, had some scrambles. I wonder if they're going to – are they going to let him drop back 40 or 45 times, which has been the norm against the Bucs. Teams don't want to run against this defensive front. Now, ironically, the Eagles had some success. They didn't run the entire first half last week on Thursday Night Football. They had some success running from the gun, right? Running with Hurts. I mean, Hurts, you know, with the zone keeper as like a threat. So the Bears could do a little spread running game.
Which they haven't done much of. Like
they haven't. This could be the time to open it up.
That's one, I think, fair criticism of the way they have run this offense with Justin Fields there, is that they haven't really tapped into that kind of stuff. What the threat of a rushing quarterback allows you to do in terms of stretching a defense laterally. What they've been doing is essentially just running the regular run game and having Justin Fields occasionally get on the move, but that doesn't tap into how much you can stress a defense every single snap if you just threaten that. You don't even need to use it. You just need to threaten it.
And normally the Bucs, they have the speed. I mean, they're good everywhere, but you've got Lavonte David's hurt. They have that sideline to sideline type of speed, but I think if you're choosing, do you want to run downhill on this Bucs team with Vita Vea in the middle, or do you want to run laterally?
But particularly,
you would rather run laterally.
Yes, you would rather run laterally, but also you can not just stress those players and make them make the play laterally, but you're putting them in a bind with the zone read and with the threat of a quarterback run. You're freezing them with the play as well as forcing them to cover distance and go laterally.
Devin White is the dude that they're going to blitz the most historically, the Bucs. He's got 54 pass rushes, 15 pressures. And if Devin White can hit, speed to power, man. So if he does have a free run at Justin Fields, we might see a few of those in this particular game. So Fields against the blitz, certainly something to watch. On the other side, the Bears have been like 12th in EPA per play, but the coverage grade is second worst. Again, they're doing it with their pass rush. So if they're going to slow down the Bucs, Khalil Mack, Akeem Hicks, Robert Quinn's rushed the passer pretty well. Those dudes have to get after Brady against a pretty good Bucs offensive line. So to me, that's the other matchup to watch. If Brady has time, I expect him to, you know, continue. He's our highest graded quarterback. I expect him to continue to have success spreading the ball around. Gronk still apparently hurt. He's got the cracked rib. I don't know. I think they're going to be easy getting him back into the mix.
Right.
Take time because they have the other playmakers.
Yeah, there's no reason to rush Gronk back into the lineup. They still have an insane array of weapons even when he isn't there. So take your time. Brady having the second fastest average time to throw in the NFL is huge for how good that offensive line has been looking. Like, it's a good offensive line anyway. It's also being protected by Brady.
Right.
So for him to be able to execute as aggressive a passing offense as they have at that average speed is huge.
As of record time, the Bears injury report doesn't look great with Darnell. I mean, we'll see what happens because a lot of guys are questionable and goes either way. But Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson, Tayshaun Gibson, Khalil Mack, and Akeem Hicks, all questionable as of Wednesday. Limited participants or worse. So just keep an eye on that. Bucks by 12.5. Where are you going with this one?
Why am I taking the favored team to cover all of the monster point spreads? I just think that blitz dynamic could be ugly for Chicago. And even though normally I think potentially against neutral, you know, average opposition, I think the Bears are closer than a 12.5 point difference. But against this specific team, I think this is a bad matchup and therefore they lose by more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're leaning toward the favorites because it's a big number, and in your head, it's like, here's this team that's going to dominate. That's why it's a big number.
Yeah, but normally I would default to the opposite side of that and be like, it's such a huge number, I expect the underdog to cover.
I took the underdog Detroit, so I'll take Tampa Bay.
Yeah, well, that's just craziness.
All right, is that it? Do we miss any games?
I hope not.
I hope not, too. If we do, let us know. Hashtag let us know. Anyway, go check it out. All the stuff that we use today, premium stats, our green line information, all that stuff. It's all part of your PFF Elite package. You can get Edge or Elite, any PFF subscription for 25% off using the promo code NFLPOD. Go ahead and type it into the chat so everybody can see NFLPOD, 25% off. For our special listeners, that's all of you guys,
And then don't be afraid to give us that thumbs up on YouTube. Appreciate everybody tuning in live or listening in podcast land for listening to me hitting the table. We'll work on it. We'll get better. I'm just trying to get better every week. All right?
Yeah.
Good?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
And the podcast.
See you Monday.
Stop talking.
See you Monday for the Week 7 review.